Why do disciple-making efforts die or fizzle out?
Every effort or any initiative that you do is going to trail off at some point, right? Whether you're focusing on evangelism, whether you're focusing on a disciple-making process, or anything that you do in a church, just there's a level of phasing out that just is natural. People start getting focused on something else. You know, energy starts to drain. So this is common.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host for today, Ben Borgman, the Executive Director of Disciple First. And it's just me and you today, Craig.
Can't wait.
There's no other buffer. You can't hide. You can't escape. It's just me and you in the podcast room today.
I love it. Hey, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think it's going to be really good.
You ran everybody else off.
I'm the lone survivor.
No, man. It's actually summer, so we've got people vacationing and everything like that. But I think today's conversation is going to be an interesting one, a great one. I think super practical for our listeners. This is one conversation of three that we're going to do in kind of a series that is highlighting very common challenges that we're dealing with every day with coaching other churches. I would wager a bet that these three conversations we are having with every single church that we're dealing with. And so we just want to share these with you as a listener. We want to be able to just continue to be a help and encouragement to everybody out there. And so whether you're in our coaching, kind of in our program and working with us now, or maybe if you'd like to in the future, at least you can enjoy this conversation and they can, you know, hopefully learn something and take something away from them.
Yeah, and Ben, of course, every one of these we've dealt with in our church.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to talk about, this is not unique, you know, to one particular group. I think these are somewhat universal. And so that's why I'm so excited about that, because not that we have all the answers. I mean, I'm probably going to, you know, show more or share more failures than wins. But just to know that, hey, sometimes we're all hitting these same problems and how to break through them is really important.
Yeah, and that's a really great point, because, I mean, honestly, most of what we're sharing out of is out of your own addressing issues, addressing challenges, and just want to share that with other people. But one thing I want to go back to, and we'll kind of hit in most of these episodes, is you reach out for help. Yeah. You have people that coach you. You have business leaders in your church. You have experts in fields. You have other ministry leaders that you are actually reaching out to and consulting. And I really want to make that point for our listeners and viewers, because I think sometimes maybe we're scared to reach out for help. Mm-hmm. We say, oh, I've got to figure this out. I've got to know this. You know, I have to know all of these things on my own. And that's just really not the case. You know, it's really great to have another set of eyes, to have somebody praying for you and encouraging you. And that's really the heart of Disciple First Coaching is, hey, we don't have all the answers, but man, we sure can build a relationship with you, and you can have somebody in your corner and learn from our mistakes, and we can pray for you and get to know you and cheer you on. And we really are seeing a lot of, I would say, practical, tangible impact with the churches we're working with. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wanted to talk about this over the course of three episodes. So let's dive into this first conversation. Really, why do disciple-making efforts die or fizzle out? Like, why do these things, even churches that have vibrant disciple-making ministries for a period of time, there's this tendency to just kind of drift over. And I think what I want to say up front is it's a natural tendency that we always have to keep our pulse as leaders on this. What's the disciple-making temperature in our church? How effective is our ministry in general? And so I think that's really what I want to dive into, is how do we address this when enthusiasm fails? For, you know, this thing that was, man, it was really great, and it was great for a season, but it got hard. Or, you know, all of a sudden, but how as a leader do you know that? And really, we're just going to talk around a few things, a few, you know, simple points. We want to talk about why is the fact that those disciple-making movements lose steam? What are those challenges that make that happen? What are some warning signs? Hey, maybe you can look ahead of it and see these warning signs ahead. And then just, how do you sustain it? So I just want to keep it super simple for our listeners and super practical. So, and let's just kind of get to the point, this first one of common reasons that disciple-making efforts lose steam. You know, I see this a lot when we're working with churches and leaders. There's some top-down issues, like from a leader perspective, things that they really should control or lead out in that are affecting this, but then also some bottom-up. From the bottom up with your actual disciple makers that are actually leading groups and investing in people and sharing their faith. I think there's kind of within that spectrum, if you would, there's some challenges. So let's talk about top down first. What are some main things that you really see that, hey, there's some things that the leaders are contributing to with this reason that disciple-making efforts are losing steam?
Yeah. Well, I would just say at the very beginning, Ben, every effort or any initiative that you do is going to trail off at some point, right? Whether you're focusing on evangelism, whether you're focusing on a disciple-making process or anything that you do in a church, just there's a level of phasing out that just is natural. People start getting focused on something else. You know, energy starts to drain. So this is common.
Yeah.
And so I think for you to expect that you're going to start off on fire and sustain that is just not realistic, right? So it's kind of like even in your marriage, right? When you start off pretty excited, you know, you're getting married, and then you go through these seasons where things are often hard. Sometimes we kind of grow distant. Sometimes we're closer together. We hit crisis, you know, but it's the part of continuing to stay at it and continuing to seek the Lord in it and continue to prioritize that thing that allows you to not see it drift. And when I think about a disciple-making movement that failed biblically, you and I have been talking a lot about Ephesus, right? And what a white-hot place that was, and just supernatural things happening, radical conversions. They did the best job of any church we can find in the New Testament of raising up and developing leaders that multiplied. And we can trace 9 cities, you know, and church thriving churches out of that. But even you get to Revelation, right? There's a fading that's already happening there.
And so encouragement of Jesus just reminding them.
Right. Go back to the things you did at first, you know, and to, you know, you haven't gone too far that you can't recover that. And so I just say from the very beginning, we're going to point out some specific things, but any effort that you have is going to have this level of fading. And so we just have to stay on it.
I mean, let's be super honest about this. How different is Cross Creek Church today than it was 18 years ago?
Oh, yeah, dramatically different.
Right? So it's not a static system that we're working in any church. No matter the size, no matter the culture, contact, it's dynamic. You have people moving in, you have people moving out, you have staff coming on, you have new staff leaving. There's just in culture. I mean, how much culture change have we experienced in 18 years?
Right.
So all of those things lend to this. It's not this static system, set it, forget it, everything's great. Right. I can just walk away and go focus on something else. Now, there is something confident about a movement when you've developed leaders living a lifestyle like this that, hey, it will, there is a natural kind of this perpetuation of that, and just this idea of, hey, it's going to continue on with where you're not just managing it, but I think you always have to have your finger on the pulse of it.
No doubt. You've got to constantly be cultivating it, constantly thinking about it, monitoring it, moving forward. Yeah. So that being said, it's going to take work no matter what you do. But you're asking about what are some things that may hinder. You know, I think, of course, you have pastors that are not living that out. I think this is a big one. You know, some pastors just think, I can delegate this. So I'm going to delegate this to other places, or I'm going to hire a guy that's going to be a discipleship guy, and he's going to do that in my church. I don't find that that's very sustainable long term, because anytime you try to silo what is the mission of the church? You know, that's not going to be helpful. You know, we don't have a pastor of disciple making in our church.
Yeah.
People are surprised by that, but every pastor we have is a disciple-making pastor.
Yeah.
And so we expect them to be living this out no matter who's on staff and what their role is. And so I think that the pastor, though, himself has got to be leading, modeling, investing in people. Of course, like the Apostle Paul, investing in Timothy, investing in Titus, investing in these guys that went on to rise up into leadership, you know, the pastor himself has got to be engaged in doing that.
Yeah, and I really think, you know, you say it, I believe, in Disciple Making Leader, you talk about culture is shaped from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also culture is perpetuated from the top.
Yeah.
That culture is sustained, a disciple making culture, by leadership setting the pace. If the leadership goes off to something else, and all of a sudden now it's just, oh, that's what the church members do, or we have other people or a specific staff member, like you said, to do that, I think it just creates this disconnect. Because when we talk about a disciple-making movement, we're talking about people that are not just replicating a tool. We're saying you're living a lifestyle that is engaging the lost, that has really helped connecting believers, that's training multipliers, that's multiplying your life, you know, as wherever God's planted you and led you, whether that, it, you know, whatever your skill and gifting, it's not based on role. And so I think all of a sudden, whether it's directly communicated or not, a leader is communicating, hey, this is just this little thing that I do because of my role, if they're not living that lifestyle out in front of people.
Yeah, so no doubt.
I think it's probably one of the greatest contributors is all of a sudden the leadership is not modeling it.
Yeah, and let me just spin off of that. I think pastoral turnover is also a factor because you may have a pastor that's white hot on this, and then in 18 months, you know, he's off to some other place, and then, of course, the next guy doesn't have that value, and so whatever movement that was happening there just immediately stops.
Yeah.
So I think there is an argument for longevity here, and an argument for, hey, I'm going to be in a spot, I'm going to stay in a spot, I'm going to keep living this value out and raising this value up long term. I know for me, that's been very integral. I mean, I've only been in a couple of churches in my whole ministry life, and that was because I was 11 years in one and 19 years in another. And I think there's a sense of longevity that helps perpetuate that. And I see churches, you know, they have so much turnover, you know, in the pastor role that whatever good was started kind of quickly fades away.
Yeah, it's hard to get traction that way. So, all right, I'm not picking on you. I'm not picking on pastors at all.
I'll try to have my thick skin on.
But I do have the gift of observation, I would call that.
Okay.
That would be a positive way to say that. So a lot, and I'm not going to make a blanket statement, but a lot of pastors like the shiny thing. They like, hey, this is new thing. And I think part of that is being a visionary leader. It's a specific gift for you guys that have that visionary gift to do that. But I think when it comes to something that needs to just sit and remain and be steady, we can't apply that, hey, I'm going to chase after this thing, chase after the shiny object over here, when it comes to the importance and the, I would say, the priority of making disciples. So you can call it chasing the shiny object, and take, you know, chasing squirrels, you know, oh, where I'm going to go over here and I'm going to go over here. But I've worked with pastors that in churches recently in the last couple of years where, especially if you start talking to maybe, say, a student pastor that's like, man, they're dead set on this. They're engaged. They're doing this. But then the senior pastor, he was white hot for a minute, but then he started chasing something else.
Right.
And they feel unsupported.
Right.
And then the enthusiasm wanes and fades. And I think that's a big thing, is that how do you fight? Because I know you, I mean, you have that tendency, but how do you press through that as a visionary leader that you like shiny objects, but hey, this is a priority. It's got to be fixed.
Yeah, I think what is behind that drive to chase after the new thing is that pastors always feel this urgency to be moving the church forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they get frustrated when things aren't moving forward.
Yeah.
And so think about 30 years ago. It was whatever LifeWay was putting out, you were gonna adopt.
Yeah.
Right. The emphasis is gonna be experiencing God. Now it's gonna be this. Now it's gonna be faith, you know, training, and then it's gonna be. So there was always something new coming off the conveyor belt, and you were to hop on that. And so the desire of pastors in general, and I think it's a good desire, is, hey, if we're stalled out here, we need to jump on to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, guys that are usually chasing the shiny object, as you say, are trying to move things forward and see the natural, you know, diminishing of momentum in their church. And they're trying to do something to get that thing going again.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I'm compassionate to pastors that feel that, because I feel the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think as a result of that, you can be just jerking people around.
Yeah.
Now we're going there. Now we're going here. Now, and your staff or your church feels this whiplash of, we're not really sure what we're doing. We're just chasing whatever he heard about at this last podcast or this other church that's doing. Now we're going to do it. And not that the Holy Spirit can't redirect and move you through certain emphasis. I think that's obviously it needs to happen, but there needs to be a core, there needs to be some things that are solid and steady as they go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that is this sense of, hey, we are going to be raising up leaders that are constantly investing in people who multiply. That should be an ongoing steady emphasis.
Yeah.
While there will be natural ebb and flows of emphasis, you know, throughout the year, whether it's planting a church or whether it's, you know, an evangelism push or a prayer initiative, you know, you can't just keep things flatlined all the time, right? So you're going to have these emphasis. But I think if you're doing that to the abdication of or the abandonment of your disciple-making convictions, now I think that becomes a problem.
Yeah. And I do think you do a great job of balancing that, continually challenging us to not just be satisfied with the status quo and always, hey, let's ask for more. Let's have God-sized goals. Let's do that. But also holding in, but that doesn't mean you take your foot off the gas pedal of making disciples, investing mm-hmm. in your life. That is a constant. And you have to be able to say, oh, we're gonna always do that. That's always gonna be a focus. But yet we're growing in this other area, or we're gonna put a little more emphasis without sacrificing this necessary.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's the trick, is saying, okay, we're moving in the direction of moving people down a disciple-making pathway, right? That's our conviction. So we're going to help them explore, connect, grow, and multiply. Yep. That's what we're going to do. And we have a tool, we have a pathway. This isn't changing. This is ever moving forward. However, we may emphasize this year connection because we see that's waffling a little yep. bit. So we're going to work on some groups, and we're going to work on trying to get people more connected. Or we're going to work on the explore piece because we're not really seeing our evangelism really peak like we'd like it to. So we're going to put a little fuel on that, or we're going to work on the multiplication side. How are we going to get more people to multiply to the third and fourth and beyond generation? But that's not changing the course of where you're going.
Correct.
Right. So I think that you can have emphasis along the way that are not completely different or abandoning the direction that you're going. And I think if you couch it that way, hey, we're not changing our direction. We're moving the same direction, but we see, hey, we need a little help here, because it's going to be like you said, it's an ebb and flow, right? You got new people coming in and yep. coming out, and the culture around you is changing. Yep. And so you have all these variables moving. So the leader is really there to help say, okay, as we're moving this direction, what are the pieces that we need to constantly be effective in that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to come back to that, too, when we talk about how to sustain that. I think it's a pivotal piece, especially with having a pathway. I mean, just having a pathway helps keep that, you know, keep you within the ditches, right? From mm-hmm. what we would say in Arkansas, we're going to keep it between the ditches. And so, gotcha. Yes, you can follow God's leading. You can still be a visionary leader, but keep that focus. Now, those are some good top-down things. Leadership.
Let me give you a couple more.
All right.
We talked about pastor turnover, but I would just say conflict in the church can often derail. You know, how many times have you yep. counseled with people and consulted with people, and they're like, man, I got a big fight in my deacon board, or I got a real conflict with this person. I think that can take the wind out of a disciple-making pastor pretty easy, just because he's dealing with conflict that's unrelated to the direction of the church, yeah. but you have an angry church member, you have a conflict that blows up in some area, and now we're talking about that and not talking about what we should be doing. Yeah. And I think that's what the enemy does, right? The enemy just loves to fire things off at you to get you off center so that you're focused now on that. And sometimes you do have to you got to rush in and put out the fire,
yeah, for sure.
But you got to get back on track with what we're doing, right? So I yeah. think conflict or changes within the church can often derail movements. Also, just you can have leaders on board or in leadership positions that are not bought into what we're doing. So if you have, you know, your deacons or your elders or however you're structured, they're not really into it. They're not really bought into it. They can really put the brakes on any disciple making movement, or just kind of harass the pastor, to the point that he gets tired and just quits and moves on, you know, because they don't really understand it, or they're not really fully bought in.
Not being real supportive.
Right. So I think that those are also big factors that hinder disciple-making movement. And by the way, this is why it's so difficult to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because you constantly have change. You constantly have conflict. You have turnover in the church. You have people already in leadership positions that are not bought in. And so this is why it's hard to sustain it. You know, you think about that.
Yeah.
And then you just throw in natural mission drift. You know, maybe the pastor has own problems at home, you know, or things like that. These are all factors that play in. And whereas, and maybe this is unfair contrast, but when you have a parachurch organization that's just focused on disciple making, mm-hmm. you know, they just have few things to deal with.
Yeah.
And so they can be very lasered in. You still have conflicts and so on, but mm-hmm. but nevertheless, you still it's very tight. But in a church, you've got a lot of things. Some may be maybe just mad about the song choice Sunday, or the paint on the wall of the youth building, and now that's a dumpster on fire, and now we got to navigate through that. So this is why in a local church it is challenging to stay the course. But my point is that, it's important to stay the course because this is really what the church was designed to do. And I really think a lot of these things are just spiritual attacks, many ways to get us off balance and off our focus of doing the thing that Jesus told us to do.
Yeah. So real quick, let's talk bottom up. Let's talk about some things that maybe, just the individual disciple maker out there, maybe what the challenges they're feeling. They're, when they're kind of in the trenches, they're in the middle of the groups, what are they experiencing and what is kind of keeping them from perpetuating this? Or maybe another way to say it, what's pulling their enthusiasm, what's kind of sucking that away, or just what's the frustration points that they're feeling? A lot of people we talk to, a lot of it is just, this idea of this idea that I'm dealing with these challenges and I don't have a way to communicate that up. I don't have, the church, I just feel like I'm just over here getting frustrated. I don't know where to, I'm dealing with this problem in my group, or I don't know how to get, there's a challenge, or I'm keep having this question that comes up in the book every time, and I don't really have a communication avenue to talk about that. We hear about that all the time, and we have to go back to the leaders and say, hey, you need to open up those lines of communication. What else do you feel like, when they're kind of in the middle of it, contributes to that, maybe their enthusiasm or frustration?
Yeah, when I think about guys that I know that have kind of faded out, they were hot-hearted at one point, a lot of times it's things that we just talked about with pastors. They have stress at work. They've got, a teenager that's having, problems. Yeah. And so they get distracted from those things. I think you're right. I think sometimes they don't feel supported. Honestly, what the average Joe needs that's just in the trenches making disciples is he needs a lot of encouragement and needs a lot of vision.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I'll talk to guys privately and they'll go, man, I did a group and couldn't get hardly anybody to multiply out of it. And I've done a couple of groups and they just weren't really into it. And they just get discouraged.
Yeah.
Hey, the Apostle Paul was discouraged at times with people that didn't follow through. I mean, we all hit these seasons of discouragement. And so I think what they need is, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And even if I don't see initial fruit, I keep plowing forward because I know that fruit will come.
That was my personal experience. God met me in a very pivotal time in my life. I mean, it's just like it was that white hot moment where, Zach invited me into a group he didn't even know really. I mean, knew partially, but really what God was about to do in my life. And I just had this initial response, like sold out conviction to, I'm going to invest my life. God's word impacted me in a different way. I'm like, there's no going back. I'm just white hot and I'm going this way. And so I started, as soon as I was invested in, started leading groups without lead one group, next time I'm praying for another group. And I would for multiple years, nonstop. And honestly, for probably about 2 to 3 years, I did not have any person take what I had invested in them the way that I did. Mm. And that was, my expectation was results.
Yeah.
And God had to, he worked, it was one summer, and I was reading, and I think this is important as disciple makers, we never walk away from walking with God. Just that core thing of, hey, you need to walk with God personally, because yes, leaders need to encourage us, but God is my greatest encourager. And so I was just reading one day in John 15, and it's like, you've got this all twisted up. You think you're doing this for results. The results are his. And so he really convicted me about that. And your job is to abide and obey. That's it. And so, you're going to keep investing, no matter if the guys you're investing in end up filing for divorce, which I've had. Guys that just live in secret lives, which I've had. Guys that cheated on their wife while they're in the middle of a disciple-making group, which I've had.
Yeah.
That's not on me.
Yeah.
And I think my job is to abide. My job is to abide in him, trust him for the fruit, and obey.
Yeah.
And, man, it was a hard lesson because I was right there in the middle of it, just really frustrated. What am I doing wrong? Because I don't have this, I didn't have the same results that Zach had in his group.
Mm.
I don't have another Ben popping out that's going to leave his job and to do it. And that's nothing on me, but I don't see the movement of God in somebody's life based on my immediate investment. Mm-hmm. And I just had a wrong perspective. It's not a healthy perspective. It's not on me. It's God's work in their heart. So my job is just to invest.
Yeah.
And so it was a hard lesson. But I think a lot of people were probably there.
Yeah.
Or get there at some point in time.
I really think you're right, Ben. Every disciple maker hits a wall of discouragement at some point because we want to see the results. You know, Paul writes to Timothy, hey, you know, be like the farmer, you know, keep plowing the field, you know, don't give in to discouragement. Be like the soldier that, you know, doesn't get distracted by civilian affairs, but stays focused on the mission. Be like the athlete that's not going to be disqualified, but continues to run the race. You know, why is he saying all that? He's saying just don't quit. You know, this part of endurance is a very important part of the Christian life and a very important part of the disciple maker's sure. life to endure. And the thing is, we just aren't going to know the results this side of heaven.
No.
You know, some things we think, oh, that was a total bust. Mm-hmm. But 10 years later, you don't know that guy remembered what you poured into his life and went on to use it.
Oh, yeah.
And some guys you thought, oh, they're going to set the world on fire and then they phase out.
Yeah.
So you just don't know. You have a part to play. Your part to play is to do what God told you to do. Kind of like Ananias, you know, when he stepped in when Paul was recently converted, you know, he prayed for him. We don't hear a lot more about him after he had a part to play there. And I think God puts you in certain places and in certain people's lives and at certain times for a reason. And you just be faithful with that, trust God for it, and just continue on.
Yeah.
So I think those are a lot of reasons why things phase out. And and pastors just know, pastors, if you're listening, just know, you know, your guys in the trenches, they just need encouragement and they need vision. Lift up their eyes a little bit to say the fruit is ripe for harvest. You know, just keep going at it. Keep staying out. I'm with you. I'm doing this with you. Let's do this together. We're going to trust the Lord for what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
So those are some common reasons, top down and bottom up. Now let's move on to warning signs. So if you have a disciple making movement going on, you're really working this idea of having a pathway and got disciple making groups and people are living a lifestyle, how do you notice if momentum is starting to fade so that you can make adjustments and you can do that? Just a few things. I mean, honestly, like the basic thing, hey, all of a sudden we had 10 groups last year. This year we only had 7. So is that indicator that maybe we're not getting the multiplication going? You know, what are some other things maybe that you would think of as just these kind of real simple indicators that maybe enthusiasm is fading?
Yeah, I think you need to ask, you know, what is the percentage of those in groups that go on to multiply? I think that's always a good one. You know, if you're hitting less than 1 out of 4,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're probably getting into a danger zone there. Or asking the question, why is that?
Yeah.
You know,
and on that point, real quick, we're asked like every coaching conversation, how many people should we expect to have that go through a group to multiply? Like, and again, there's no real hard and fast answer, but I take the parable of the sower when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. I take the parable of the sower pretty literally. 1 in 4. is a healthy number. And looking historically over 1 in 4, I would say that's kind of the bottom of it, like at least 1 in 4. And then you'll probably see, you know, maybe at seasons you'll have more than that. But I think it's a great point of, hey, at least how are you seeing people multiply what you're given on top of how many groups? I think those two in combination are really good numbers.
Yeah, you know, I used to hover around 1 out of 4 pretty consistently for a period of time. I've found that if I will pair people up to co-lead groups together, I can get that percentage higher.
Yeah.
Because just go out and do it on your own, there are very few people that will actually do that.
Yeah.
And it hit me that, you know, when Jesus was sending out the 12, he didn't say, okay, all you 12 guys, just go. You know, he sent them out 2 by 2. And I think there was a reason for that. There's mutual accountability. There's mutual encouragement. You can share the load, all the reasons why. And so I think that actually dispatching guys to multiply coupled up, you know, or teamed up, if you will, I think that will drive your percentages higher.
Especially if you get a guy that's hesitant. You know, I've seen people do it different ways. Hey, you want to co-lead a group with me? Or, hey, so-and-so's leading, you know, that's in your group. And that works through some of that hesitancy. You know, we had this yesterday. Zach and I were on a conversation with a guy that's about to start disciple-making groups. And, he, like, we were talking to him about the importance of selection in this too. Like your output, really, if the better job you can do, prayerful consideration, evaluating people instead of just saying, hey, you're here, come in my group, but really being prayerful about it, seeing who God's working in, almost like in salvation, you see who somebody's that's curious about, you know, about Jesus. Who is Jesus? They're asking a lot of questions. That's a great, you know, that's kind of like your open door. Same thing. Zach shared with him yesterday. I thought there was a really good, really just general, easy way. Who's lingering after events that you have? So if you have a volunteer event or you're doing a, you know, for your church, you're doing something, who's always lingering after to help, to have conversations? They're not just in, out. They're not just consuming. You see them leading. You see them. But he was like, hey, just at your next, you know, at your next kind of church-wide function or whatever, who's lingering? And the guy was like, man, that's a really, he's like, I've already got a couple of guys in my mind just based on that comment. Yeah. So I think that that idea of selection directs your output.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something else that, but again, you have to have your, you have to kind of be thinking about that and who, how many people are we having multiply? And that can be difficult to manage, to measure, but I don't think it has to be complicated.
Right.
I think, you know, it does take a little effort. It takes some, we are shepherds though. We're supposed to know what the sheep, you know, what are the sheep doing? Are they hungry? Are they scared? You know, what's going on with the flock? So we have to know, and it is worth our effort. So that's a good one too. Craig, I want to talk about one that I know you dealt with and have you speak into this. So when you guys first came here, y'all started using a disciple-making tool that somebody invested in you or using that. And, you know, I'm a beneficiary of that. There was this burst of names, people, like real people that you saw on the output of your disciple-making efforts that were, hey, they're starting to lead in certain areas. Some of crazy people like me and Keith and Zach, we're going to leave our jobs. Like, you start to see this output in many other people at that beginning. You see this burst of just names and faces. But there came a time after that where, like, there's no new Keiths. There's no new Mark Massey's. There's no new, you know, all these people that were popping out. Mm. And you as leadership started saying, why? And I think that's important. I mean, because again, this is people, like multiplication and disciple making groups is all about people. It's about seeing people develop and emerge. And so I think it's a great indicator. Are the stories you're telling about emerging leaders 3 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe enthusiasm's waning.
Yeah, that's so a really good
point. How did you, number one, speak a little bit about assessing that? Like, kind of what were you seeing once you started digging in? And then how did you pivot to kind of stoke the flames there?
Yeah, I think, again, anytime you start with an initiative, people get pretty excited about it. So you're going to see a lot of names rising up quickly. They're eager. They're excited to get into groups. You're going to start seeing that. You may ride that for a year or two even, you know, because you still got a lot, depending on how large your church is, you may have a lot surfacing at the beginning. People are hearing about groups. They're starting to get excited about that. I want to get in a group. But no matter how big your church is, what there's a time when all the kind of low-hanging fruit has been taken.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was a period of time where I'm looking for who I'm going to disciple, and everybody's already scarfed up the guys that I was going to meet. I'm like, well, who am I going to go meet, you know? And so I think at that point, you've kind of burned through the, like I said, kind of the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. That is to be expected. And some guys just quit. They go, well, you know, our interest kind of drained, so we're going to move on to something else. But I think that's the time to really pray, seek the Lord of the harvest, to bring laborers, you know, and to get out in the field. Yeah. And so I think you just have to think, okay, now that we've got these number of our leaders through, how do we help them to tap into their spheres of influence that may not even be in our church? Yeah. And that's the way the movement kind of spills out from your church into other people. Now, certainly you have new people coming in, so those are all going to be people that you're going to be going after and seeking to invest in. We had a guy not too long ago that joined our church. I sat down and met with him. He had some questions about the church, so I met with him. Very quickly, he was rolled into a disciple-making group. He bounced over to Montreal for a church planting training that we did. Mm-hmm. He's now on the missions team. He's already multiplied, and he's now, I think, on his second group, and he's hot-hearted. Yeah. I mean, he's going because he, you know, people invested in him. He caught the vision of it. And so I think you have to just constantly be aware of who are those new people coming in and what's it like to disciple and engage people even outside the church.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. One time I had a guy, I've told this story before, that we were in a group and he got a text and he kind of chuckled. And I said, what is it? And he goes, I got a guy that I know from work and he was inviting me to be in a group with him. And he showed me the phone and it was like our material.
Yeah.
And so we don't know this guy, but somehow somebody, you know, invested him multiple generations out and now he's back around. So I think you just need to know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Don't be shocked by it. And certainly don't quit.
Yeah.
But just say, okay, how are we then going to pivot to making sure that these guys are tapping into their spheres of influence that may not be people that regularly come to the church?
Yeah. So force them out. And again, you don't do this just because you want to bring people into it. It's not about building your church. It's just, hey, you're impacting your world. But I mean, I would say in your story, how many coaches go to Cross Creek now that at one point in time, they were not even believers.
Right.
That because of, hey, I've got, like, probably because of you don't have anybody disciple, you're like, well, I'm going to go press into where my kids go to school and
right.
I'm going to become a chaplain and I'm going to, and so all of a sudden you just start living the life of a disciple maker and you start sharing your faith and getting to know them and build relationships. And God took that, and yeah, some of those guys started coming to church, yeah. But it also gave you an opportunity to press in instead of quit,
right.
And to continue to be a disciple maker.
That's right.
And instead of retreat. You know, also too, from a leader standpoint, you know, you guys looked at like our offering of tools. Hey, it was really complex at the beginning. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of different things, and that really led you to write the Grow series as, mm-hmm. Hey, it's a simplified, not that any of those tools were deficient. They were great. We saw God use them. I mean, I'm, you know,
of course,
you know, definitely grateful for the impact that, you know, using the tool one-on-one with God. I mean, that really mm-hmm. dramatically impacted my life. God used that tool. But so it's not saying that, hey, the Grow series is better than this. It was holistically, hey, we were using five different tools and it was complicated.
Yeah.
So bringing new people in and maybe just changes of, as culture changes, mm-hmm. Hey, let's communicate this in a different way. It's simpler. It's our language. It's that type of thing. So I think I say that not to, hey, you need to go reevaluate, you know, disciple maker out there or pastor out there, you need to go evaluate your disciple making tools. I'm just saying you need to always have your, you know, looking and evaluating what's going on and why. And
yeah.
That was the thing here for our system. It was, hey, we needed to kind of simplify that to keep people moving kind of down the line.
Yeah. I think, asking the questions, where are the sticking points? Where are the problems that we see? How can we address those problems? And I do think, too, you need to have certain times throughout the year that you kind of agitate this. You know, you raise the flag. You really lay down some challenges. Yeah. Maybe that's a preaching series that you do. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's an event that you do. We host an event annually that we bring in planters and we challenge multipliers. And we just, you know, we just stir their hearts again. And so you might think about that. You know, what am I doing to kind of agitate these these people into activating them?
Yeah. And I think that kind of moves us into this idea, how will we sustain as we kind of close up this conversation? And I think that's a great one is, how are you gathering your multipliers? Mm-hmm. How do you gather them together and encourage them? How do you gather them to, like you said, kind of agitate in a good way? It's like create some, you know, this a little bit of, you know, rubbing up against each other and just this friction and excitement that creates when you start to, oh, I'm not alone in this.
Right.
There's other people out there with the same frustrations. Yeah. So, I mean, we've, you know, and again, I think you guys have tried it multiple different ways of doing that, whether that's annual gatherings, whether that's quarterly multipliers dinners, mm-hmm. whether that's, hey, we're going to go on a camping trip. And we've, you know, you've always tried different things. And I don't know if you always have to settle on one thing.
Right.
I think just actively need to be able to gather those multipliers together. I think that solves one of the challenges, especially like you can, hey, what challenges are you facing?
Yeah.
What wins are you seeing? And just that way there's a mutual benefit of that group together and you're hearing from them versus you saying everything. It's not always just you train your multipliers. It's gather them together, let them share, hey, this is confusing. Hey, this is a challenge I'm dealing with. And maybe somebody can speak to that even within the room, not even a pastor.
Yeah.
And then also just a time to tell stories and encouragement. I mean, it really does. It doesn't have to be a full-on conference. Y'all have used that and used it well, and it could be something like that. Or you know, listeners out there could bring them to the collective next year. We'll have more information on it coming up in February in 27. It's not just for our church. It's not for our net. It's for all our listeners and stuff with Disciple First too.
That's right.
But what are you doing on an ongoing basis? hey, get some breakfast burritos and gather everybody on a Saturday morning and tell stories and celebrate. I mean, it doesn't have to be complicated, but you got to do something.
You know, Ben, one thing that I would add to that, too, is take some of these guys that maybe they have been very active, maybe they're not as active now, take them on a mission trip.
Yeah.
You know, mission trips are the best thing for spiritual agitation, right? Because you're all of a sudden immersed in the kingdom work for a brief period of time. Yeah. And as a result of that, they get hot-hearted again. And so I think regular mission trip engagements is another big agitator.
Yeah, and that can be local. It can be local or international. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to go to Africa, which we're going here shortly. But I just think that I think that's a great point. I think just getting people out of their normal flow of life and seeing that there's that God can use them in bigger ways than they can imagine. And, again, it's just encouraging to do that. And again, we kind of talked about it already, but celebrating your wins and telling stories. I mean, it just, you know, that people, and it, again, it's not celebrating in a, like in a braggy way, or you're favoring a person. It's highlighting the work of God through personal investment.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of, you know, some people kick back at that. Well, you know, if we're just, are we just kind of, you know, celebrating in a negative way, or are we highlighting a person and showing favoritism and, you know, puffing up their ego or something? That's not it. You know, storytelling and celebrating wins is a great way to motivate people.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to have that. And I would say overarching, you hit this on earlier in our conversation, this idea of intentionality. Mm-hmm. So you have a pathway. Hopefully most everybody out there listening, they've heard us talk about pathway multiple times. You know, and if you're making disciples, hopefully you're doing that within the, you know, within that structure to be able to kind of guide and make sure everybody gets what they need. So you have that intentionality of having it, but then along the way, how are you measuring effectiveness?
Yeah.
And having those things, having your finger on the pulse of it. You know, I think just what are those measures? What are those indicators? And so that you can see if things are still effective or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of be talking about that in one of our other conversations too, about how to evaluate effectiveness. And so we'll kind of dive deeper into that. Anything else you feel like, hey, what's some great things just to sustain this culture?
You know, Ben, I would just say, kind of taking all of our conversation together, you know, it's like taking care of a garden, right? You know, you're going to have weeds that come up, you're going to have outside influences that affect you, you're going to have storms and that happen, but the faithful gardener is the one that's out there with his hands dirty, you know, in the work, pulling out weeds, you know, pouring more water here, fertilizing this over here, setting up protections around it so that it can grow. Yeah. And so this notion that, hey, I picked my tool, I preached about the pathway one time, I got a staff member to run it, that's just not realistic.
Yeah.
But if you can say, hey, I've got to got to be living it out myself, I realize that there are all these factors that are going to try to take my attention away, but I just keep cultivating the soil, keep evaluating as we go, keep going with the people that are with you.
Yeah.
You know, those that are, you know, don't worry about the people that are negative. Don't worry about the people that are critical or that are not producing. We can easily fixate on those people and we get really distracted and really disheartened, but focus on the people that are doing it with you.
Yeah.
Right. Focus on the people that, it's kind of like the preacher that preaches against all the people that aren't in church. Well, you're preaching to the people that are there. Right. So focus on the people that are with you, encourage them, build them up, act like a team, evaluate as you go, stay at it. How can we continue to, you know, foster this this explore, connect, grow, multiply pathway that Jesus gave us? And what you'll find is if you do that over time, if you don't quit, you don't leave, you stay with it, then you will see much more fruit than you ever thought possible.
So I want to go back. You brought an illustration in my mind, a personal illustration when you were talking about gardening. All right, so my wife, Carrie, she wanted to, we have this circle. So we have a circle drive, and there's just, it's grass in the middle. There's nothing there. So that bugs her. Doesn't bug me. I'm like,
you're perfectly happy.
You got to have something there. Like, it's, you know, you got to, our word for the day in the podcast room was aesthetic, right? It's got to be. So anyway, and I get it. It looks good. So we've got a friend from church that does stone work and stuff. So he came out, and he did a a flower bed out there. So we planted a little small tree and we have flowers and things. We have dirt out there and I've been having to hand water. We have a sprinkler system.
Yeah.
And so it's getting to the point where, okay, I can turn the sprinkler system on and that's probably water enough. I can look from my window and I can see, hey, there's flowers on the deals and everything. But we've been having, just wasn't right. When I would go look at it, like there was, you know, some leaves on this were fading or some flowers were falling, some bugs on this or that. And so when you were saying that, I thought about me just standing there looking at the garden like, hey, everything looks okay. But then like last night I went out and actually hand watered it and I could see, hey, there's some weeds growing up over here. Hey, this tree that I thought might be having problems, well, actually there's a new sprout on it and I can see that it's okay. And you know, I can do that, or I can, and so, but I don't see that unless I'm right there. I don't see that if I'm intentional about it and I'm, you know, I'm actually actively just being that gardener and just cultivating that and kind of have my, get my hands dirty a little bit. Right. If I'm standing from afar, then I really don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, as you were saying, I just think that's a great illustration of a pastor standing from afar, not in the trenches, not having his finger on a pulse of that disciple-making movement, not making disciples himself.
Right.
You can all of a sudden stand afar, oh, everything's fine. Everything's fine. And then it really not.
Right.
So anyway, sorry for that aside, but it came up as you were doing that. So thanks for this conversation today. Thanks for your wisdom and your expertise from a lot of hard work and frustration, not expertise because you're just so smart. Greg. But
School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, so for sure. To you as a listener, viewer out there, thank you for listening today. We just want to say that we've developed a coaching framework for people that get stuck. Because that happens in ministry, correct? Right? We get to these points and we hit a sticking point. Yeah. So we've developed a framework that can really help you identify where these sticking points are and then help you move forward and get unstuck in that. So if that interests you, if you're feeling stuck in ministry right now, reach out to us at disciplefirst.com/coaching, and we'll have that link for you in the show notes. But we would love to just walk through. We have a free evaluation. You can go on and you can click there and schedule a call with us, and we can just kind of tell you more about that. But what I would say is don't get frustrated. Don't be alone. Let somebody just speak into your ministry. At least call and we can pray with you. And so just please look down the show notes. Take that opportunity to do that link and let us just kind of see what's going on in your ministry. So again, this is a part of three episodes that we're gonna talk about coaching. And so we hope that you'll join us for the next two episodes. Thanks for watching.